AMN Healthcare empowers you with total talent solutions to provide the highest quality care. Our single partner approach goes beyond staffing to provide tech-enabled, strategic workforce solutions that build dynamic and successful workplaces. Visit AMNHealthcare.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing for Friday, April 28th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Benjamin Franklin once wrote that nothing is certain except death and taxes. But nowadays, there's another issue to sort out. Your digital footprint. The photos, social media accounts, and other digital assets you create during your life. Our family and tech columnist Julie Jargon joins us later in the show to talk about how to pass on access to your online accounts. And it's been a busy week for tech earnings. We'll find out what the first quarter results that are out so far tell us about the health of the tech sector. Amazon reported a surge in growth, rebounding from a post-pandemic slump in sales. The e-commerce giant said first quarter sales rose 9% compared with the same period a year earlier. Quarterly profit also climbed, coming in almost 50% higher than analysts expected. Amazon, like other tech firms, has been cutting costs and shedding workers. The company said it would finish laying off roughly 9,000 corporate employees by the end of this month. It's already cut about 18,000 workers in an earlier round of layoffs. Amazon is just the latest in a series of big tech companies that have posted earnings this week. With me to discuss the picture these results are painting is our Heard on the Street tech columnist, Dan Gallagher. Dan, Meta, Microsoft, Google parent Alphabet, they all released their earnings earlier this week. What is all of this telling us about the health of the tech sector?
Well, it's telling us a couple things. You know, the tech sector is very much affected by the global economy, which is in a pretty slow phase. So on the surface, these are pretty slow growth results for the most part. These were not the kind of double-digit big gains that we are typically seeing with these companies. However, another dynamic going into this particular earnings season was that Wall Street really expected bad numbers. So the dynamic for those three is that they were able to exceed these rather lowball expectations. So as a result, they actually looked pretty good. So the stocks all went up following.
Meta's earnings in particular seemed rosy compared against some analysts' expectations. Operating profit was up. Sales were up. Is this a sign that Mark Zuckerberg's cuts, his year of efficiency, as he put it, is paying off for the company?
It's definitely a sign of that. And they're still not even done. You know, what they cautioned is that what we saw in the numbers kind of reflects only about half of those reductions so far, because they announced a big cut late last year and then they announced one in March. And so what we were seeing in the actual numbers was just reflecting last year's cuts.
What about digital advertising, which has been a sore spot for Meta and others?
Advertising is also proving to be a little bit better than people expected for both Google and for Facebook, Meta platforms. In fact, the advertising revenue is growing again for Meta, and it wasn't for a few quarters, and that was a bit of good news for them. And Google's search ad business held up, even though YouTube hasn't.
Let's talk a little bit about cloud business. I mean, for companies like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, that's a big chunk of their earnings. So how have those units been faring as the broader economy deals with kind of shrinking market conditions?
That is where I think they benefited from the lowball expectations because, yes, growth in all those cloud businesses is slowing and showed even at Microsoft, which had what Wall Street considered a really good report that way, had their slowest cloud growth on record, but it was a little bit better than people expected. It's showing that that's a business that is pretty resilient, because if you're a big company and you've adopted a lot of cloud technology and service contracts, you don't just like cut those off because the economy slumps. It's kind of part of your ongoing thing now. But the other side of it is that, you know, companies that are contemplating shifts to the cloud or increasing their spend in this kind of environment, they're doing that at a much slower pace.
More tech results are coming out next week. So what will you be watching for with them?
Well, the big one to come next week is obviously Apple. And that's a pretty different business than the ones we've been talking about, because that is still mostly a hardware business, iPhones, iPads, Mac computers. That's probably not going to be another big growth story. Obviously, in fact, the signs are that the current iPhone cycle is kind of a weak one. And they're very much a company now that has like a big year of growth about every 2 or 3 years. And then between that is kind of flat, because now people hold on to their devices for longer periods. You know, for Apple, you also watch like services and stuff that's attached to that hardware. But we're also going to see next week reports coming from companies like Uber and DoorDash, some of these like gig economy companies that might be reflective of how consumers are spending on technology type services.
All right, that's WSJ's Heard on the Street tech columnist Dan Gallagher. Dan, thanks for joining us. In other earnings news, Intel suffered its largest ever quarterly loss as sales of personal computers continued to fall. It posted revenue of $11.7 billion for the first 3 months of the year, a 36% drop from the same period a year earlier. But there was some positive news. Intel signaled chip demand may have hit its bottom and projected second quarter sales that, at their midpoint, were slightly higher than analysts' expectations. We've got some more layoffs news from the tech sector. Dropbox is cutting 500 jobs, about 16% of its workforce. In a letter to staff, the CEO said the layoffs are reflective of a downturn in the economy. He also said that recent interest in artificial intelligence means a necessary reshuffling of its manpower. And Lyft, which we discussed on the show Wednesday, confirmed it's cutting 1,000 workers, or about 26% of staff, in its latest round of layoffs. The company also said it would scale back hiring, eliminating 250 open posts. Your photos, emails, even your streaming accounts are part of your digital footprint. So, what's the best way to safeguard that information after you die? We'll explain after the break.
AMN Healthcare empowers you with Total Talent solutions to provide the highest quality care. Our single partner approach goes beyond staffing to provide tech-enabled, strategic workforce solutions that build dynamic and successful workplaces. Visit AMNHealthcare.com.
We're all creating digital footprints, everything from our photos, emails, banking, and other accounts. So what happens to that information once we die? It may sound morbid to think about, but it's becoming increasingly important for loved ones to know how to gain access to this data so they can close bank accounts, safeguard important documents, and find family photos. Julie Jargon, our family and tech columnist, joins us now to talk through the best ways to do this. So Julie, you actually spoke to some people who've experienced what happens when loved ones don't have a plan for their digital footprints. Can you tell us about their experience?
Yeah, I spoke with a woman who lost her longtime partner in February, and the two of them were avid photographers, and they had thousands and thousands of photos saved in his iCloud account. She had access to his passwords and she had them saved. But apparently at one point, you know, he'd had dementia and he had gone online and done some tinkering, and he apparently changed his Apple ID password without telling her. So after he passed away, she started to see emails to him saying that his iCloud account payments for storage was overdue and his credit cards had been shut off after he died, and she was worried about losing access to his iCloud account and all those photos that they had saved. She turned to someone in her retirement community for help. Turns out that his iPad was still signed into his Apple ID, and so that made it a trusted device, and she was able to go into the iPad's settings and change his Apple ID password and restore the payment system under her credit card and regain access to all the photos.
I mean, that sounds really lucky because, of course, you know, even to our email addresses, to our social media accounts, we can have some really personal information that we want shared with our loved ones when we're gone. So let's get into how we should deal with this. First, you know, we have so many passwords for so many accounts. What's the best way to ensure that those get passed on to the people we want them to?
You know, a lot of people write down on paper their passwords to accounts, but oftentimes you're prompted to change a password for security reasons, or you forget your password and you reset it. So a lot of people suggest that you have a password manager, which will keep track of your passwords automatically. And if you do have a password manager, it's really easy to designate a contact who can be granted access to your password manager after you die or if you become injured and incapacitated.
Okay, so it's almost like you're talking about having an heir to your passwords. Could you also have an heir to your online accounts, like the way we have inheritors of our homes or our other property?
You can do that with specific online accounts, bank accounts, and that kind of thing. But if you have a password manager where everything's in one place, those people can then have access to all of your accounts. And it could be, you know, accounts that you might not think are that important, maybe your Netflix account or some online magazine subscriptions, but things that might just need to be dealt with and closed out so you don't keep getting charged, or the estate of the person who passed away doesn't keep getting charged after they die.
God, there are just so many accounts that we build up over our lives. What about ones that we use maybe every day, like an Apple account or a Google account that might be connected to our emails, for example?
Exactly. Both Apple and Google have ways to name legacy contacts. In the case of Apple, it's really easy to just set it up from the settings in your iPhone or your iPad or your Mac. And you can name someone that you trust. And then what it does is it provides a passkey, a long alphanumeric access key. And you have to share that with your legacy contact. That way, when you pass away, that person can reach out to Apple, provide proof that the person died by showing their death certificate and providing that long access key. And then they can get in and have access to photos, messages, notes, files, device backups.
What about people's social media accounts?
There are ways to memorialize Facebook and Instagram profiles. Facebook, however, is currently the only big social media platform that allows legacy contacts to be named.
Julie, is there any other advice that listeners should take away if they want to make a plan for their digital footprint once they've passed?
Yeah, it's also really important to have a talk with your family members or loved ones about your digital assets. If you just hand them a list of passwords or grant them access to all of these accounts, they may not know what you want to have done with it. So you might want to tell them whether you want your social media accounts to be memorialized, or whether you want certain things to be deleted, whether you want them to be able to download your data. It's probably a good idea to just really make your wishes very clear.
All right, that's some advice from our family and tech columnist, Julie Jargon. Julie, thanks for joining us. And that's it for this week's Tech News Briefing. TNB's producer is Julie Chang. We had production assistance from Jess Jupiter and Zoe Colkin. Our supervising producer is Melanie Roy, and our executive producer is Chris Sinsley. I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.
Discover the extraordinary ideas shaping our future at the Future of Everything Festival, when the Wall Street Journal brings together leaders from business, science, sports, and culture, May 2nd through 4th at Spring Studios in New York City. Register today using code PODCAST to receive 20% off your ticket. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.